Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm going to take our attention to a different story. And I'm going to lead into this story with a really horrific story, because I want to set within the proper context the story of suicides among American troops. I think this story broke 6 days ago. It was picked up very unaggressively, if you will, by the New York Times, I think the Washington Post. But there's been no significant mainstream coverage of this. This article that I'm going to share with you was from the BBC. The U.S. Marine Corps says it's trying to determine the authenticity of the images published by TMZ that appear to show Marines burning the bodies of dead Iraqi insurgents. By the way, there is no such thing as an Iraqi insurgent. They were Iraqi civilians. TMZ has published 8 photographs. I'm looking at them now. And says that it has another 33 that are too graphic to show. It's amazing that you could have 33 more graphic than the 8 that I'm looking at. TMZ said that it was told that the photographs were taken in Fallujah in 2004. A Pentagon spokesperson said that the actions depicted in the photos are not what we would expect from our service members. In other words, they recognize that it was U.S. Marines that perpetrated these acts. And what they show is a series of pictures of one is a man in a Marine uniform pouring gasoline on dead Iraqi civilians, then setting them ablaze. Other pictures show the bodies on fire and the charred remains afterwards. In one image, a Marine is seen gloating, posed next to the skulls of one of those that they had killed. Now, as we know, Fallujah was the scene of some of the fiercest fighting between U.S. forces and Iraqi civilians during the Iraq War. And the most gruesome, the most inhuman, the most animalistic act I had ever witnessed filmed were the citizens of Fallujah coming out in the tens of thousands to abuse 4 American civilians that they had murdered. And they desecrated their bodies. They had women and children spit on them. They poked sticks at them. They dragged them through the streets. They then burned them, and then they hung them in effigy while they shouted slogans like Allahu Akbar as they were suspended from an arm or a leg from a bridge. I don't think I'd ever seen anything quite that inhuman, that savage. But the U.S. Marines appear to have topped it. That we killed Fallujah citizens, and when we did so, we desecrated their bodies. It is a reason why Muslims hate the United States. Now, the fact that we perpetrated such a horror is one thing. And, you know, mind you, it's the Iraqis didn't attack us. Saddam Hussein never threatened America. He had no means to attack America. He had no interest in attacking America. America was not an enemy of Saddam Hussein. There was no Iraqi involved in 9/11. We had no reason whatsoever to invade Iraq. None. We were the aggressor. We went into their country. And in Fallujah, a city of about 200,000, we massacred their citizens, and then we gloated as we torched the bodies. All right. That's the mindset. Now I want to tell you a story that is that I am surprised that this story isn't on the front page of every newspaper in America and isn't the lead story with every media outlet. Here's the story. The number of male veterans under the age of 30 who commit suicide jumped 44% between 2009 and 2011, the most recent year for which data was available, according to numbers released Thursday by the Department of Veterans Affairs. Why? Why did that occur? Why did the number of veterans who are killing themselves under 30? I mean, these are guys that just recently would have returned from Afghanistan and Iraq. Why? Did the U.S. military indoctrinate them into devaluing life to the point that they would more readily kill? Are they unable to deal with the reality that their friends died in vain, making a bad situation worse? Why don't we take the time to consider the cause? Suicide rates for female vets also increased by 11% between 2009 and 2011. Now, that's understandable. Most have been raped, first by their military officers over them, and then by the Department of Defense, which humiliates them. The suicide rate among veterans remains well above that for the general population. Now, this article says, with roughly 22 former servicemen and women committing suicide every day. Well, the fact is, that number's not right. It's not 22 former servicemen and women committing suicide every day. That number's horrific. But that's not the actual number. The number of GIs is killing themselves each day is more than twice that. It's 55 per day. 55 per day, you know that's 20,000 a year? You know that's 200,000 since the first troops came home from Iraq and Afghanistan? Larry, before I go to CNN's coverage of this same story, every time we hear about America's deaths in Iraq and Afghanistan, we're always told about those that were killed in action wearing a uniform. We're never told about the support staff that was there that were killed. We're never told about those who died because they couldn't deal with what they witnessed and what they did there. But the numbers that died in Iraq and Afghanistan, which is reported at just shy of 7,000, that number's not even remotely correct.
No,
because we've forgotten to account for the 200,000 that took their lives once they came home because they couldn't deal with what they witnessed.
The military has a very, very, very strong, you know, public relations division, and that's what you're seeing. I mean, it's as simple as that. I mean, why let people realize what's going on at the same time you're trying to recruit them, you know?
Right. That's why I'm so devastated and disgusted when I see, you know, join the U.S. Navy, a force for good. Be all you can be, you know, join the U.S. Army. And I recognize that as a parent, to the degree you can still influence an 18-year-old child, you are deliberately corrupting them when you support them joining the U.S. military. You know, that's the way the ads are depicted. And you are absolutely aiding their own debilitation when you do this.
That is true. I got to tell you, with my son, the way it worked was he ended up running around with a bunch of pararescue guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took them out shooting, and he could outshoot them all. He's mm-hmm. won over 300 tournaments, I mean, with mm-hmm. world-class shooters.
Mm-hmm.
And the Air Force wanted him on their shooting team, and he just decided to go that route. And, of course, you know, he was living up in Georgia, and I'm living here, and that's what he did.
Yeah.
You know, but,
you know, if there's one thing shooting a target and being good at shooting the targets, another thing shooting humans.
He can shoot anything. You better believe it.
And when you start shooting humans,
mm-hmm.
that something goes awry. In his seven instructions on the second of the two tablets, said, don't make a habit of killing.
Yeah, well, there's look, I've known guys with 100 kills, and I mean up close and personal kills, okay?
Yeah.
I really have.
Yeah.
And the one thing that you'll note about it, a lot of them are real friendly. They got big smiles. They got a solid handshake, but they're ripped up inside. They're all of them ripped
up absolutely.
Inside.
Yeah.
So you, you can't.
And
you
know,
can't
the people that they killed.
Your brains on your on your shirt and act like a, you know, a 2x4 just got dropped out of the back of a truck at a job site.
There is a situation where you can kill where it does not have a negative influence. There's a fellow down in Texas that that killed a man with his bare hands who was in the process of raping his 6-year-old daughter.
Yeah, well, good for him.
Good for him. I can see killing on that basis and not having a moment of regret about it. In fact, it's not in violation of Yahweh's instructions because he's not making a habit of killing. But killing someone you do not know, involved in a war like Vietnam where you have no stake and you're in, you've invaded their country, it's going to mess you up.
Yeah, based on a falsehood called the Gulf of Tonkin. You know, the other thing, about that is, you know, we see all the time, and you got under, you know, I'm kind of an FB representative, if you will. But I see it roll all the time. Let's thank our troops for giving us freedom. And I'm thinking,
it's not true.
How, you know, it is absolutely, it's an irrational. It's right. See, this is just some irrational patriotic fervor because these troops are being used to for the purposes of whatever the elite want.
Right.
And by the time they leave, by the way, they know this.
Right.
I mean, it was
you
like Vietnam having no firing zones. I had a good friend that was court-martialed over there. People may not be aware that there was such a thing as a no-firing zone in a war. But, you know, he was his people were getting taken to pieces, and he ordered them to fight back.
Yeah.
I mean, he was watching his guys get torn to pieces. He literally fought back and was court-martialed. You know, that's how ridiculous the political elite is when they put people in a war.
The fact of the matter is that American military has not fought to defend American freedom. It's you can go through America's 101 wars, and you can't find an example where America's military fought to defend America's freedom. You know, we have not had an enemy that wanted to invade this country, that was capable of occupying this country, and there's no circumstance where the U.S. military has successfully fought to defend America's freedom. That's the truth. The other is a lie. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. CNN is reporting every day at least 22 veterans take their own lives. That's a suicide every 65 minutes. As shocking as that number it is, it is actually much higher. The figure released by the Department of Veterans Affairs in February is based upon the agency's own data and numbers reported by 21 states from 1999 through 2011. Did you catch that? It's reported by 21 states. How many states are there in the United States, Larry?
Last I checked with Obama, 53, but I think there's 50, personally.
All right. Okay. So you got 21 of the 50 to 53, depending on what you how you view the Dominican Republic and Washington, D.C., and places like that. Those states that reported represent 40% of the U.S. population. Of the other states, including the two largest, California and Texas, and the fifth largest state, Illinois, they did not make any data available. So the 22 returning veterans who take their lives each day are those from the 21 states that did report, and those that took their lives from the 29% of states that did not report, representing 40% of the U.S. population, representing, 60% of the U.S. population, they weren't even counted in the number. So the 22 per day, to get the actual number for the entire U.S. population, you'd have to divide it by 0.4. That's 55. 55 per day. Now, even in that, that number is not comprehensive because it's an arbitrary system.
Yeah,
the U.S. Department of Defense, right?
Reporting.
Yeah, the Department of Defense doesn't want you to know the truth. And so they do not keep track of returning veterans. The only way from these 21 states that we know it is there's a box that the family can check that says that this person died of suicide, and that and then there's another box they can check that says they were a veteran. If they check those two boxes, the Department of Defense will investigate it and determine whether or not the report is true, and they'll be counted. If they don't check the box, even if they were a veteran, even if they committed suicide, they're not counted, even if they're from the 21 states that actually reports this. The number is much worse than 55 a day.
It's just a sad state of affairs, Yada. I mean, we're...
But 55 per day.
The death, the ridiculousness of it all for more chaos. I mean, nothing good has come out of any of it, as you've pointed out time and time again. Every situation's worse.
But
you know,
think about this.
Worse
put
by the
put
time
this in late. Scale. 200,000 Americans over the past 10 years who witnessed the carnage in Iraq and Afghanistan have come back and have been unable to deal with life.
You know, I saw a young Marine talking about, former Marine, talking about how they were pushed to get their first kill. You know, everybody comes back with a kill. You know what he did his first day? Huh? I mean, this guy was in pieces. But, you know, he was fired up. He shot a guy on a bicycle.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And he's sitting there in tears over it today. You know, he can't live
Every single person that Americans killed in Iraq were Iraqi civilians.
Yeah.
Every single one. This was not a war where the Iraqi government had attacked America and was threatening to occupy America, and we sent in troops to defend America and to fight against the military. Saddam Hussein's military didn't fight. They did not engage. Afghanistan didn't even have a military. And so 100% of those that we fought and killed, or just killed because, well, we wanted to kill, were civilians. Who wasn't counted? This article from CNN reads, people like Levy Derby, who hanged himself in his grandfather's garage in Illinois on April 5th, 2007. He was haunted, says his mother, Judy Casper, by an Afghan child's death. He had handed the girl a bottle of water, and when she came forward to take it, she stepped on a landmine. When Derby returned home, he locked himself in a motel room for days. Casper saw a vacant stare in her son's eyes. A while later, Derby was called up for a tour of Iraq. He didn't want to kill again. He went AWOL. And he finally agreed to other than an honorable discharge as a result. He is just one example. But Derby was not in the Veterans Administration system. And Illinois did not send in data on veteran suicides to the Veterans Administration. He wasn't counted in that number, but he should have been. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Before we continue with the CNN review of this story of the number of suicides, the best estimate is 55 per day, 200,000 since Americans began coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. We have Jaime on the line. Jaime's calling in from Colombia. He's been on the program before. Hello, Jaime.
Hey, Yada, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, I want to let you know that Marcella has sent me the documents in Spanish that she has, and
okay.
So I started to pass those here, so that's really nice to have those.
What Jaime is talking about here is that the prophet of doom, Yada Ya, which is a review of 2,000, 3,000 page review of prophetic testimony from Yahweh and from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, an introduction to God, which is an analysis of the seven topics that are most important to us that God wants us to know, and even questioning Paul, which is provides absolute proof that Paul was a false prophet. that they I wrote them in English, and that Marsala, lovely woman from Mexico, had invested the time to translate them into Spanish. And Jaime, living in Colombia, wanted access to them, so that's what he's referring to.
Yeah, definitely. So it's really nice. I did want to mention something I was just reading about, and that is that in relation to the United States and the Middle East, and all of the stuff that we've gotten involved there, after we left, all we did was leave a bigger mess than what was before. In one instance, has it been an improvement.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's even true in World War II, where we claim to have been so effective at ridding the world of Adolf Hitler. What we actually did is left Europe in worse shape with being under the thumb of the Soviet Union and Stalin. And so we didn't leave Europe better than we found it because of the fact that we assumed that the enemy of our enemy was our friend, the Sheng Zhu myth. And even in Asia, while the Japanese were savage in their dealings with the Chinese, and we can claim that we defeated the Japanese, therefore we saved the Chinese. No, the Americans turned against Chiang Kai-shek, and we aided and abetted Mao Zedong. And as a result of our interference, rather than having tens of thousands of Chinese die as a result of the Japanese war, 40 million Chinese died under the yoke of Mao Zedong. So you have to be really careful even in touting that America left the world better, right? Because you can't make the claim that America was defending, that the U.S. military was defending American freedom in World War II. You can't even make the claim that we left the world better than we found it by our sacrifice of nearly 400,000 lives.
Quite true. I sent you an email with, it's supposed to have been verified, but it is true, a letter that Putin had just written to Americans, and which covers a lot in relation to Islam, and which he basically, you know, is telling Obama and Americans to wake up that Islam is the danger to the entire world, and that he's citing in the letter that what the Western powers need to do is to unite and absolutely destroy them.
You have to be really careful on things that you read online that are attributed to Putin, particularly that are written to Obama. Most of them are not true. But there is a letter that I covered on this program over a course of several days because it was so profound. Leading up to America's desire to intervene in the Syrian civil war by bombing Damascus and flying cruise missiles over the Russian fleet, when Putin came up with a plan to keep us out of World War III. That would have started World War III had Obama and Kerry started bombing Syria, because China and Russia are on one side and would put us on the other side with Europe. That would have started World War III. And Putin was the one that saved us from that by coming up with a plan to destroy the Syrian chemical weapon supply. And at that time, he wrote a letter as an op-ed piece to be published in the New York Times that was written to all Americans. And it was profoundly accurate in terms of its depiction of what is happening in Syria and with America's jaundiced, inappropriate, egotistical, errant view of itself. So there is a very profound letter in that regard, and I would encourage people, you can Google it, Putin's editorial published in the New York Times, and read it. Almost everything that Putin says in that letter is sobering, and it's accurate.
Yes, I remember that. I remember that coming out. Anyway, I called you in relation to something going on in relation to the Torah. that I haven't, you know, I download all of your messages, teachings on a daily basis, and then listen to today, and then I actually, as a rule, go to sleep listening to them, to the subconscious, if that's possible.
Okay, there you go. So I'm putting you to sleep. I appreciate the kind word. No, I'm just joking with you.
But the thing that's interesting is this, you know, sometimes when I start to listen to other teachers, immediately I notice a difference, and you can see the mixing with Christianity, you know. I got to turn it off. I'm going, no, I don't want to listen to this.
If you're going to try to tell the truth, tell the whole truth, and don't this notion that somebody has credibility because they are revealing some truth while they're mixing their truth with other religious lies. I view that as more dangerous than the person who is resolutely wrong, because the person that's resolutely wrong is easier for people to recognize being wrong, and the person that weaves lies and truth together, that individual is much more duplicitous, much more deceptive, much more beguiling. So I'm with you in that regard. That's why I do not partner with the Messianics. That's why I do not partner with the Hebrew Roots movement. That's why I do not partner with anybody that has some realization that we're missing the Torah's teaching, but still wants to blend it together with Pauline Christianity. Because half truths are more damaging than our outright lies.
Yeah, you really are, in a sense, if you're describing a politician.
Yes, correct. Or a religious individual. Their religion is a blend of lies. I mean, Roman Catholicism grew because they embraced every pagan lie of all the peoples that they wanted to assimilate into their religion. I mean, they assimilated Christmas, they assimilated Easter, they assimilated the Trinity, they assimilated the idea of Mary being the Mother of God, the Queen of Heaven. They assimilated popes and priests and nuns. They assimilated all of that into the religion. Those were just pagan practices by the peoples that they wanted to make part of their religion, so they would have a bigger power base. So that's just the reality, is that religion is a blending of many lies.
Yes, and it's really quite incredible living down here in Colombia, South America, because the paganism, the idolatry, yes, is so blatant, it's unbelievable. I mean, the idols of the Virgin Mary are the statues are everywhere. You
right.
can put them on the balconies. You go in a person's home, and they got the pictures of Jesus Christ with the Sacred Heart. All of it.
Yeah, no, and God is opposed to all of it, because first of all, as it relates to Mary, the Queen of Heaven, the Mother of God, God was not born, so he did not have a mother. Mary is absolutely not the queen of heaven. She is just an individual, no longer. I mean, if she is, her soul is, I'm certain, is in heaven today, but she has no contact with any of us. And she has absolutely no authority, no power whatsoever. She does not spend any time in this purgatory realm. She cannot hear prayers, and she is based entirely on Semiramis, pervasive part of the Babylonian religion that permeated all other pagan religions, was the idea that a woman is impregnated by the rays of the sun and gives birth to the son of the sun and becomes, therefore, the Mother of God and the Queen of Heaven. It is one of the most comprehensive pagan traditions that has been incorporated into the religion of Christianity. And so when you see idols to Mary, that's what you're witnessing. It's part of a long history of paganism being incorporated into mainstream religions. And it's, when you talk about that in South America, though, it's interesting how to be effective in South America, because of the long history of paganism there and the various death cults that existed in South America amongst the native peoples, the Roman Catholic Church did exactly the same thing, that it embraced all of them. And it just gave different names to the things they had celebrated for centuries.
Right. And,
And it's been, and so it's Roman Catholicism in South America is really rampant with paganism. That's why it's so unusual for to have a South American pope, because the Roman Catholic Church always knew what they had down there, and that it was this mix of idolatry and paganism with their church doctrine melded in and mixed in. That's why I was so surprised that they authorized an Argentine pope.
What's interesting, though, too, about I'm not sure about all the countries, but quite a few of the countries were actually established or founded by Jewish people that came from Europe to especially avoid the Inquisition at that time. And they don't realize that they are of Jewish descent. But when you start to educate them on their origins, they get quite amazed at finding out that they're more than likely they are of Jewish descent. Anyway, I wanted to ask you in relation to some of the points haven't heard you cover when I got all your recordings going back to like 2011 or something like that. But anyway,
you've got about 15 seconds before we head to commercial. Go ahead.
Water baptism. Where?
We had an issue with your telephone. We'll return after the commercial break and listen to Jaime's questions, and then we'll press on with the suicides reports of the U.S. military. Before we pick up and listen to and try to respond to Jaime's questions, Jaime's calling in from Colombia, South America. I will just want you to know, since the story we were covering on the realization that 200,000 American GIs, principally Marines and U.S. Army, have taken their lives after serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that means that the death toll from that war is worse than any American war except the Civil War and World War II. In fact, it's worse than all of America's other wars combined, and the fact that that's not being conveyed. So we, as Americans, really don't know the consequence of us invading Iraq and Afghanistan, making two bad situations infinitely worse, is one of the great tragedies of our time. Now, we will cover that story at this time tomorrow, but between now and then, I do want to hear Jaime's questions and see if we can provide an answer. Go on, Jaime.
Okay, so I was asking this in relation to now. Where are we in relation to water baptism?
Let me ask you. Let me ask you a question, Jaime. Did Yahusha baptize anyone?
No, not him.
No, he never did. Did he? So if he is Yahweh's implement of salvation, that's what his name means. It means Yahweh saves. So if indeed he is Yahweh's corporeal manifestation and his the implement that Yahweh deployed to save us, and he never baptized anyone, it would be fairly obvious that therefore baptism is not a requirement of salvation. Correct?
Yeah, that's what I think. Naturally, in Christianity, it is, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. So there is no correlation. Now, if you were to look at water immersion, is one of the regular teachings in the Torah. Water is a universal solvent. It is used to symbolize two things in the Torah. One is cleansing. The other is life. Life emerged from water. Life is nurtured by water. Without water, there is no life. And water has a unique property, and therefore it is the universal solvent, and therefore it is depicted as a means to cleansing. And that's the symbolism of water. And so water is used from that point of view. The other point of view that water is used to communicate is that we are born out of water. In the sense that, when a a new child comes into the world, the mother's has that child emerge from a sack of water. The water bursts and the child is born. We come out of water. And so this concept is also associated with our rebirth spiritually, us being cleansed and reborn spiritually by way of the set apart spirit. So from Yahweh's perspective, being cleansed and being reborn and understanding the role that water plays in that regard is insightful as a teaching. In terms of doing it, now I would never recommend that somebody be baptized in a physical sense, nor does it have any meaning to Yahweh as a physical act. It is simply a symbol of what the role of water in our birth, in our life, and in us being cleansed. And if you see it from that perspective, then water's a good thing. But don't get caught up in baptism. One of the problems, of course, with baptism is it has taken the pagan interpretation. In Babylon and in most pagan religions, infant baptism was a way of bringing new children into the cult. And so infant baptism is absolutely wrong because it's not an expression of the child. And also it has come to replace circumcision. Yahweh has been explicit. He says, if you're a male and you're uncircumcised, you cannot participate in Passover, which means you are going to die. You're not going to become immortal. And second, he says that an uncircumcised male is not allowed in his home, which means you'd be excluded from God's family. So circumcision is what baptism has been designed to replace in the religion of Christianity. And circumcision for a man is essential, where baptism is simply a symbolic thing. Well, that's thank you, Jaime, for your question. We're going to turn to the Torah when Shattering Mist returns after the news and the commercial break. We're going to continue our discussion of what God had to say to Abraham and what it means to us. Please stay with us.